I'm Brady Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. Just because an audit can't find fraud doesn't mean there isn't fraud. Plus, Governor Bob Ferguson claims to care about voters, but his actions say otherwise. Plus, the feds yank several Obama and Biden-era Title IX settlements, one of them for a Washington State school district. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. Less than a gallon of gas, unfortunately. Go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Can't even wait for the sequence to be done. Get me on camera. I can't wait. Listen, guys, I'm fired up today, and I can't even start the show with the segment I want to start the show with because it's made me so angry, and it'll make you so angry that you'll just turn it off and you won't watch the next hour of the show. So I'm going to save it for the next segment. It doesn't mean our top segment isn't fantastic, but I have so much rage for Bob Ferguson right now. I need to take a couple minutes to calm down, and we'll talk about fraud. I thought it would be good to nerd out about fraud, how it's investigated, potential fraud, and all of those things, because there was this headline from Como News in Seattle that popped up on my social media yesterday, and I thought, what? That doesn't sound right. The headline was DCYF, Department of Children, Youth and Families, says no reportable fraud linked to state audit. And of course, DCYF handles the federal child care payments that have been at the center of so many conversations and coverage around fraud since what Nick Shirley uncovered at the Quality Learning Center in Minneapolis. And I thought there is no way in hell that an audit found no reportable fraud for the Department of Children, Youth, and Families that for 5 years the state auditor has said is basically an agency that's basically not auditable. And then I looked at it, I'm like, oh, they're referring to the same audit that the media covered last week. And I will give the rest of the media credit because their headlines were much more accurate. Their headlines were all some version of state audit estimates $37 million in questionable payments by DCYF. So I was like, what the hell is Como News talking about? I think on one hand, it was just a really bad headline. But on the other hand, it's this sort of idea that just because you can't actually prove fraud doesn't mean there's not fraud happening and that we need to do a lot more to make sure that these federal payments and other federal payments are being made appropriately. So here's what the state auditor told Como News in that article with the really bad headline. It says an overpayment does not automatically mean fraud, the agency wrote in an email to Como News. The state auditor's office and DCYF did not find anything that needed to be referred. The state auditor, Pat McCarthy, told Como News last Monday that auditors did not find any, quote, conclusions of fraud, but said that DCYF has concerns. If it has concerns, it can forward any findings for review. So there's a big difference between fraud and suspicious payments in a sense, right? In the legal sense. Because if you commit fraud, it's a criminal offense. But when you look at the state audit saying $37 million in questionable payments or payments that can't be properly tracked, to me, there's not a lot of daylight between those two things. Yes, it's the difference between whether you can send someone to prison or not. But if money didn't get to where money was supposed to go to, that's the same problem. Whether it was done intentionally, fraudulently, or whether it was done because of laziness or incompetence, I genuinely don't care. So what I thought we would do on the show today is dive a little bit into this audit that the state of Washington put out and kind of walk you through what they're auditing, how the audit works, and the specific finding about the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, and much of that being childcare payments that are sent from the federal government to be used for childcare in the state of Washington. So here is the purpose of this audit. It's not an all-encompassing audit. This specifically has to do with the state of Washington's financial statements and compliance with federal laws and regulations. So this is an audit looking at money the state is getting from the federal government. And I think, you know, maybe more so than other audits where they look at state programs that are funded, you know, through our general fund or other state revenue, this audit is important at this period in time because we have a president in the White House who I think cares a lot about fraud. So if you have these state audits where it's looking at how they're spending federal money and there's some red flags in there, we have an administration that might actually do something about it. Under Biden, probably not. because we're a Democrat state. He was a Democratic president. But, you know, the vice president, J.D. Vance, he's on this whole fraud task force. They were down in L.A. specific to home health care providers. Like, they've been putting people in prison. So I'm like, OK. So it found, contrary to any headline that might have oversimplified things, here are some of the key findings of this audit into federal funds. It said when it comes to internal controls over financial reporting, it found significant deficiencies and material weaknesses. So it says we identified deficiencies in the design or operation of internal control over financial reporting that we consider to be significant deficiencies. And we identified deficiencies that we consider to be material weaknesses. So much more significant and widespread. And then it said on federal awards, internal control over major programs, they also found significant deficiencies and material weaknesses. Now, that's a problem. OK, if that's the broad takeaway, right? How Washington State spends federal funds and tracks that spending has significant deficiencies and material weaknesses. And what do you have when you have deficiencies and weaknesses in how we track and spend funds? You have opportunity for fraud. And that's what we want to do away with. Now, one thing that just, and I recommend going over this to the extent that you're interested in reading a 1,100-page audit. I mean, maybe you have no life. Maybe you just really love those things and love numbers by all means. You could even throw it through an AI machine. But there was a couple things that stood out to me about just generally the money we're getting from the federal government. So these are the major programs audited. So it says the following programs were selected as major programs in our audit of compliance in accordance with uniform guidance. So like a lot of money is being spent on these things. The feds are giving a lot of money to the state of Washington. I highlighted all of the ones that are about COVID-19. Holy smokes. And this is an audit for money spent in 2025. But oh my gosh, 5 years later, the federal government, even under Trump, is spending so much money related to COVID. And some of these I'm fine with. Like this one is on coronavirus state and local fiscal recovery funds. Yeah, businesses were screwed in states like Washington, totally screwed over by how we chose to respond to COVID. So I'm fine with them getting some recovery funds. I'd like to know exactly how they're used. But some of these on the, okay, Children's Health Insurance Program, COVID-19. Okay, I don't think children are suffering from, like, need a special COVID-19 health program. I mean, I don't even understand. There was one in here for COVID-19 block grants for community mental health services. What the hell does that have to do with COVID-19? And COVID-19 block grants for substance use prevention, treatment, and recovery services. Homeowner assistance fund, immunization cooperative agreement, epidemiology and laboratory capacity for infectious diseases, education stabilization fund. So a lot of money is still being spent by the feds on COVID-related things. So I thought I'd point that out. So let's get into some question costs, because I think there's a lot of attention right now on the child care payments. And that's because of the Nick Shirley Quality Learing Center, a lot of what was uncovered by citizen sleuths in Washington state who went around knocking on doors of licensed child care providers who were getting big bucks from the state of Washington. And there was no kids there and it was super shady and weird. So there's a lot of attention on that. But frankly, I think we need to do a little more work looking into what the hell is happening at the University of Washington. So it gets into these questioned costs. This is for University of Washington's research and development cluster. So I imagine some of this has a nexus to COVID. Likely improper payments, $73,512,000 in likely improper payments to the University of Washington's research and development cluster in terms of how they utilize that money. Why is no one talking about that? I get it that the childcare thing is a big deal, but I was looking through this and I was like, holy hell. So yeah, that's next on our list. So there was two big findings of likely improper payments in this from the Department of Children, Youth and Families. If you could pull that back up, Nicole. So temporary assistance for needy families and childcare and development fund cluster. So they found about $10 million in likely improper payments for temporary assistance for needy families and $29 million in likely improper payments on childcare. And you combine that, that's where they're getting to that $37 million figure. So what exactly happened here? And this is the crux of, just because they can't prove fraud or find fraud doesn't mean there's not fraud. In fact, what did the state auditor say a couple months ago about DCYF? They were so poor at tracking money that it made the agency for 5 full years virtually impossible to audit. If you make yourself virtually impossible to audit, of course they're not going to be able to prove fraud. Doesn't mean it's not there. So this was the big finding on those $37 million in questionable payments. It says the Department of Social and Health Services did not have adequate internal controls over and did not comply with requirements to ensure it referred all credible allegations of provider fraud. So as an example, what they were doing is fraud allegations that popped up that were less than $1,000 were just reviewed and tracked to ensure that any repeat allegations could be compiled to show a pattern of possible fraudulent behaviors. So if it was like potential fraud, but they're thinking it's less than $1,000, they didn't even do anything about it. Nope, that's fine. Steal $999 from taxpayers, totally fine. Let's just review that. Let's just put it away in a file somewhere. And now they've changed that. So starting in March of 2025, they now will refer all credible allegations, regardless of the monetary value of the allegation, which is, of course, very important. And DCYF as an entity has said, I guess, and told the auditor's office that they plan to increase, you know, their tracking and reporting of federal dollars and all of those things. So I think when you get to this Como News article and this headline that went out that said DCYF says no reportable fraud linked to state audit, that's just totally disingenuous. You have $37 million in what I would consider missing money. And I don't care if it was stolen on purpose. I don't care if they lost it to incompetence. I don't care if it's a bookkeeping issue. $37 million is a big deal. And you need to find a way to make sure that those questionable payments moving forward are accounted for. So given kind of the conflicting headlines, what we found when we looked into the audit and its findings, which is very concerning and serious, we reached out to State Senator John Braun, who's the leading Republican in the Senate, for kind of what do you do with this then? Is the audit just, oh, put the audit out just so people know? What is the actual change, consequence, et cetera, going forward? Senator Braun, welcome back to Undivided.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so we've got this report now from the auditor, and I saw this Como headline pop up yesterday, and it just confused me because it said DCYF says no reportable fraud linked to state audit. But of course, we know that there was like $37 million in questionable payments. So I guess, you know, when you say $37 million in questionable payments, I automatically assume fraud. I mean, how can we determine if it's fraud if the payments can't be properly traced?
Yeah, they're being misleading here. What we have is credible, now audited response that says there's misuse of funds, that it's not going out properly. You could draw a technicality and say, hey, we haven't proven fraud, and I think that's fair, but we have demonstrated without a doubt is that there is credible reason to be worried about this situation, that it demands more investigation, that it demands accountability. One way or the other, if there's misuse, if it's fraudulent, there should be consequences. If it's not, and it can all be explained, well, then the people deserve to know that also. Either way, they can't sit on their hands or look the other way and pretend it's not happening.
Right. Like, if the money isn't being used for what should be used for, I don't ultimately care where it wound up. It didn't wind up where it was supposed to go. And so that's problematic. So this has been, I mean, DCYF, the state auditor called them unauditable for like 5 years. So what is the accountability then for DCYF?
At some point, the executive branch has to say, look, no, you have to. And I hope they're going in this direction. You have to maintain the record so you can be audited. And when there are audits like this one that show significant examples of overspending, of overpayments, that you follow up and you found out why. And their response was somewhere between laughable and you know, maddening, that they need more money so that they can more accurately audit themselves is frankly stunning that they would respond that way when they have over 500 people in their administrative division. They've grown other parts of their agency by almost double. In you know, the example we've used is government affairs has doubled in the last 5 years, and yet they can only afford 6 auditors. They're auditing a small fraction of their payments, and the only way they think they can figure it out is if we send them more money. That's pretty lame. I just say it that way.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of attention on DCYF because it has had these repeated issues with not being auditable, because not tracking things appropriately. But there's, I mean, this specific audit, as we pointed out, this has to do with Washington's financial statements and compliance with federal laws and regulations. I mean, there's some really concerning stuff in here about the University of Washington and their research and development cluster. So this is money we're getting from the feds. Is this something the Trump administration could crack down on?
Absolutely. We've already seen some communication to the state from the Trump administration asking for better explanation of how money is being spent. And the Democratic majority will wring their hands and say, hey, this is you know, don't look over here. But the fact is that this is the administration trying to make sure that the taxpayers' money is being spent as it is intended, responsibly and accountably. And for the state to do anything other than try to answer the question, try to get to the bottom of it, I think is mismanagement at the very least.
Yeah, and to the credit of our state auditor, Pat McCarthy, in her statement about this, she said, by doing these audits, the state can preserve more child care funding for the working families and providers who depend on that support. And that's what it's about, right? There are people who rely on these services, you know, who aren't involved in fraud or whatever it is, and you want to make sure they have the funds they need. One more question for you, Senator. Where the hell is Tonneson? Am I missing something? So a former state lawmaker, she was put in, head of DCYF as the secretary of DCYF by Governor Bob Ferguson. There have been so many controversies around DCYF for the last year, more than last year, but under Bob Ferguson. I haven't seen her once be public facing. Am I missing something? Is she like, I mean, ill? Is there a family? What is going on?
It's a great question, Brandy. I don't know the answer, but you're right. Whether it's these audit results, Child Protective Services, juvenile rehabilitation, foster care, we have had crisis after crisis, problem after problem, and it's been pretty much crickets. I mean, the people, you can give her a little bit of a pass when she first took over, but now it's been a year into the job. You know, the problems going forward are owned, like it or not, by the Ferguson administration and by the Secretary of Department of Children, Youth, and Families. She should be present. She should be answering these questions that the public have about the proper use of state and federal funds.
Yeah, I'm not asking this like I'm not being hyperbolic or asking as a joke. Is she alive? Like, when is the last time you saw her? Did you see her during the legislative session?
I think the last time I saw her in person was just before the session. We had an in-person meeting, I believe, in December. Okay. The last time I saw her in person.
It's odd to me.
Yeah, I have no evidence that there's anything, you know, there's anything wrong with her. If that's the case, I don't know of it. What I think you're pointing out, though, is that she's just not, you know, not present in the middle of very big deals. I mean, as you said, this isn't just about fraud. This is money that to go to services people genuinely need, and instead it's being misused or overspent, and just problem after problem after problem.
Yeah, and I mean, I hope she's okay. I'm sure she's okay. It's just I've never seen and witnessed anything like this, where the head of an agency is so hard to get in front of a camera and is just so absent from all of this public discussion. All right, Senator Braun, we know you were like on a fishing boat earlier and got off to come on and talk fraud with us, so we do appreciate it.
All right, well, thanks for having me on.
So we appreciate John Braun talking to us about that. And it's important to follow through. I mean, you have an agency that has had audit after audit after audit with very problematic behavior. So we just what? Continue to allow them? I mean, I think it's a point where the federal government under Trump needs to step in and say no. You can't, like, I'm not saying they've failed audits, but you can't have this many questionable findings for that long and still continue to get money from the federal government. All right, now that I have kind of calmed down, I guess, from when I first saw the clip I'm about to play you, we can get to the story I was thinking about starting the show with. But first, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. And really, if you're just interested in housing policy at all, from a builder or developer perspective, great organization to be part of. They have events all across the state talking about housing policy. They're down in Olympia advocating on your behalf. And also, I think one of the most popular parts of being a member is their screening and forms. Like if you, for instance, have one unit or you're just starting in this kind of world of being a housing provider and you don't know where to start, they can help you out with all the forms you need. Screening tenants, etc. Make sure you're up to date. And I think that just is like, if you don't know where to start, RHA has your back. RHAWA.org. It is Washington's trusted resource empowering housing providers. Bob Ferguson is the worst. He is the worst. I would take Jay Inslee back in a second. Let it be known. I would take fumbling, bumbling, climate grifter Jay Inslee back for a fourth term or even a fifth over snaky, lying, manipulative Bob Ferguson. So he was asked about these legal challenges to the income tax, the unconstitutional income tax that he just signed into law. And the fact, you know, one of them is pushing for a referendum. There's obviously going to be an initiative if that's not successful, etc. This is what he had the audacity to say.
They'll have their day in court. As it should be, they'll have their day before the people. Totally appropriate. I'm very supportive of the initiative process, and I think that people should weigh in on this. The Supreme Court should weigh in on this. So I've got zero issue on that.
Well, hard to hear. Nicole, can you play that one more time for us?
They'll have their day in court. As it should be. They'll have their day before the people. Totally appropriate. I'm very supportive of the initiative process, and I think that people should weigh in on this. The Supreme Court should weigh in on this. So I've got zero issue on that.
You think the people should weigh in on it? They have, Bob, 10 times. You think the Supreme Court should weigh in on this? They have, Bob. Repeatedly since the 1930s. And every single time, the Supreme Court has said it's unconstitutional. And every single time the voters have weighed in on it, they've said no. So this idea that, oh yeah, the voters should do it, they did it. Over and over and over, and you and your Democrat friends still said, let's pass it anyway. Not the least, and for him to say, I value the initiative process. Bullshit. Bullshit. You waited as long as you possibly could to sign the income tax into law, and the only reason to do that is because you wanted to run out the clock and shorten the amount of time that voters have to run an initiative and to collect signatures. You care about the voters. You signed it into law with a clause at the end that precludes them from being able to run a referendum. You care about the voters. Last week, you signed a bill into law that allows an unelected board of bureaucrats to remove sheriffs from office that the voters selected. You care about voters. My ass, you care about voters. I can't think of a more disingenuous statement than all the lies and BS that he packed into that tiny little 10-second clip. Play it again, Nicole, because I want to make sure people know what a weasel he is.
They'll have their day in court. As it should be. They'll have
as
their day before
be,
the people.
He says.
Totally appropriate. I'm very supportive of the initiative process, and I think that people should weigh in on this. The Supreme Court should weigh in on this. So I've got zero issue on that.
Because you've stacked the deck. That's why you have zero issue. You lost all those times in court. You lost all those times at the ballot box. And what did you decide to do? You stacked the deck over the last 6 to 10 years, and you set up your party to try to do what you've tried to do unsuccessfully a dozen times before. He has no issue with it going to voters now. Why? Because they passed a law a couple years ago that says that they get to put a tiny little statement on the ballot next to the initiative that's going to talk about all the wonderful things the income tax on millionaires would fund. Oh, it's going to fund, you know, it's going to help the kids. It's going to fund free school lunches. It's going to fund a working family's tax credit. It's going to fund tax cuts for businesses, even though not one of those things is actually guaranteed and written into the law on how those taxes must be used. Not one thing requires it. They put this flowery language in the law, as you know, that said, oh, we intend to use this money on XYZ, all these nice things. And the only reason they do that is because they know that they'll take from that intent section to build the statement that goes on the ballot underneath the language of the initiative. And they want it to sound like the income tax on millionaires will fund all these wonderful things that everyone loves so much. For that man to stand there and say, oh, I want the voters to weigh in, ignoring the fact that they've weighed in a dozen times. Oh, I want the Supreme Court to weigh in, ignoring the fact that the reason the income tax is unconstitutional in the form they're trying to push it is because 100 years of state Supreme Court precedent. There is no one on earth right now, no one on earth in a position like his that is as fake and dishonest as he is. Absolutely insane. For some good news, a heavy hitter has now joined the legal battle against the state income tax. A former Washington State Supreme Court justice, a Democrat, is now going to be on the side of overturning the illegal, unconstitutional income tax, Phil Talmadge. He's a former Washington State Supreme Court justice, a prominent Democrat. He's joined the new legal team that's being formed to challenge the income tax through the Citizen Action Defense Fund. He's going to join former State Attorney General Rob McKenna. So you've got, like, I don't know that you could put together a better legal team to fight this income tax. His background a little bit, he was a state senator from the late 70s to the mid 90s. Then he was elected to the state's high court. Now he runs Talmadge Law Group, so he's a private lawyer. But he is someone who Democrats respect. He is someone who the legal community respects. He's certainly going to be someone who the state Supreme Court justices respect as he's arguing about the unconstitutionality of this law. And then he's right there with Rob McKenna. Legal dream team. Legal dream team. So I love that. What else do I love? There's a recall against Bob Ferguson. So this is an interesting one. It gets a little nerdy into the weeds, but in order to recall a politician, it can't just be because you don't like them. I see all these comments all the time on videos like, Brandy, we need to recall Bob Ferguson. Recall. It's like, well, you'll have to wait until he's on the ballot again. That's your recall. Unless he does something that is specific under law as misfeasance or malfeasance. Now, I would argue knowingly signing an unconstitutional law certainly should allow someone to be recalled, but I guess not. So this just came out this morning from the Washington State Standard. Ferguson's failure to fill seats on a Washington campaign watchdog panel incites recall bid. It says two of the commission's five seats have been vacant for months, leaving them open for that long, violates state law, according to a recall petition. So this petition is being run by a guy named Connor Edwards. He's an attorney who does a lot of campaign finance violation complaints. He says that Ferguson's inaction to fill these vacancies, quote, constitutes wrongful conduct that affects, interrupt, or interferes with the performance of his official duty, which would be sort of the recall basis for this. Edwards said he's trying to assert pressure on Ferguson to address a situation that could hamstring the commission in the upcoming election season. While the recall effort may be a long shot, frustration has also been boiling up among the commissioners on this, again, commission. It's a watchdog commission for campaign stuff. It says with only three of its allotted five members, all must be present for the citizen panel to have a quorum, which is required to adopt rules, conduct hearings, and decide cases. In March, the commission had an information-only meeting due to one member's absence. So they're having a really hard time doing their job under the law because Ferguson hasn't filled these two vacancies. So if even one of the three members, like, is sick or has an emergency, then they don't have a quorum, they can't have an official meeting. So does that constitute, I mean, I guess recall would be very, recall's always very difficult, but I don't think that means you don't do it. And you have a judge basically decide, okay, here's your recall petition. Does it meet the legal threshold for the misfeasance, malfeasance of a public official? And if it does, you can move forward and collect signatures and try to get it on a ballot. So, you know what? Let's just hope. It doesn't have, there's nothing wrong with having a little enthusiasm and hope for something. All right. So this is an interesting, complex sort of story from the federal government. That you probably saw a lot of headlines on. So the U.S. Department of Education, it announced it is rescinding illegal Title IX resolution agreements. Okay. I'll explain kind of the what those are in a second. But it said, today, the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights rescinded provisions of resolution agreements from prior administrations, freeing schools from their illegal and burdensome enforcement of Title IX. So it says resolution agreements are used by the Office of Civil Rights to require schools to take specific actions to resolve noncompliance with federal civil rights law. Previous administrations distorted the law, contrary to its plain meaning, to police discrimination on the basis of gender identity, not sex, and imposed resolution agreements with no legal foundation, but rather based on ideologically driven interpretations of Title IX. They illegally saddled school districts with Title IX violations for actions such as improper use of preferred pronouns. Yeah, so under Obama and Biden, they, of course, had this interpretation of Title IX that gender identity was part of that. And so discrimination on the basis of sex was also like if you misgendered someone in a public school or you're a public school teacher and now you've discriminated against them contrary to Title IX by not respecting their preferred gender pronouns. And so there are these agreements that are put into place under the Obama administration, under the Biden administration, for certain school districts saying, hey, you had this civil rights complaint under Title IX, had something to do with transgender student or a faculty member not feeling like they were respected. And then the federal government will have sort of rules and guidance for that school district that they must follow moving forward as part of these agreements. Now, the ones that they're rescinding is definitely of interest to us because it includes an agreement with the Fife, Washington School District. They're also rescinding agreements with the La Mesa Spring Valley School District and Taft College in California, Cape Henlopen School District in Delaware, and the Delaware Valley School District in rural eastern Pennsylvania. So all of the ones they're rescinding had something to do with the school being forced by the federal government to totally reinterpret the true meaning of Title IX. And of course, the news is covering this as Trump administration hates trans people. It says Trump administration terminates agreements to protect transgender students in several schools. No, it's just not going to punish school districts who don't use students' preferred gender pronouns. It's not going to treat that as a Title IX violation. And therefore, if there's not a Title IX violation, then you absolutely do not need a settlement agreement between the federal government and the school district over a Title IX violation. Because the current administration no longer considers that a Title IX violation. And so the Assistant Secretary for Civil Rights, Kimberly Ritchie, released a statement on this. She said, and this is important because she's actually looking into a couple local cases involving students who are being discriminated against because of the transgender issue, like Callie Keeler, that Puyallup wrestler who says she was sexually assaulted because she wrestled against a boy, not knowing it was a boy, and he grabbed her. I mean, you'll know that story very well, and it wasn't reported and all this stuff. So she's been looking into specifically some cases here. She said, today the Trump administration is removing the unnecessary and unlawful burdens that prior administrations imposed on schools in its relentless pursuit of a radical transgender agenda. While previous administrations launched Title IX investigations based on misgendering, the Trump administration is investigating allegations of girls and women being injured by men on their sports teams or feeling violated by men in their intimate spaces. Today is yet another demonstration of the Trump administration's commitment to uphold the law, protect students, and restore common sense. No longer will the federal government force educational institutions to violate the law or punish them for upholding it. Now, here's what I'll say. Public school setting, I want everyone treated with dignity and respect in accordance with the law. But I just happen to not believe, and I think the Trump administration agrees, that a school employee should be forced by the federal government to throw biology out the window and refer to a boy as a girl or a girl as a boy. I mean, call them by their name. There are a lot of different ways around that. That can come before forcing non-scientific mandates on school staff. So that's what the Trump administration is doing away with. Instead, as they said, they're pursuing cases and settlements and investigations when it comes to women who are actually being discriminated against and put in danger by having men or boys in their spaces and competing against them. And I think that's the more appropriate use of enforcement actions as it pertains to Title IX. Yeah, I mean, I don't want teachers running around. I mean, it's a different situation if you've got teachers out there bad-mouthing trans kids, kids who think that they're a different gender because some adult has influenced their life. You don't want a situation where a teacher is treating any child with hate or disrespect. That's not what this is. This is about preferred gender pronouns, and we've had enough of the preferred gender pronouns. We're over it. All right, we'll get to our segment, Unbelievable, coming up next. The amount of money you can get as a teacher if you're caught grooming a student. Wow, what a lucrative thing. All you got to do is go groom a student, and you can get hundreds of thousands of dollars. Isn't that wonderful? First, it is April, so, I mean, it's been beautiful out this week, absolutely gorgeous, and so there's a lot of things that you might need to get done outside, spring to-do list, that you're just getting started on, but let Valentine Roofing take a few of those things off your plate. For instance, exterior cleaning of your home. If your home got a little dirty over the winter season and all those storms like mine did, Valentine Roofing can come out and make it sparkle and shine for the sun and spring weather. They can also inspect your gutters, clean your gutters, roof inspection. And if you need a new roof, now is a great time to get it with Valentine. Right now you can bundle and save 10% off your entire job when you add new gutters to any new roofing project. And I mean, let's be honest. If you're replacing the roof, you might as well replace the gutters too. I think that's common sense. And so if you're doing that, then you can get the gutters onto it, 10% off the entire job. Valentine also offers those gutter guards to help keep leaves and needles out for good, which is cool, giving you an additional layer of defense against clogged and overflowing gutters. So reach out to Valentine for a free estimate, 206 Roofing. Even if you're just calling for an estimate, make sure to tell them that you heard about them right here on Undivided and that you heard about their 10% off bundle when it comes to a new roof and new gutters. And they can talk about how that works. 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. I'm talking a little fast today, aren't I? Okay, I'll slow down.
So excited.
Boop, boop. I mean, that Bob Ferguson cut. Are you kidding me?
I know.
I wish I had been there because I would have been like, you have to have lost your mind, sir. Maybe he just does things to trigger me to see how triggered he could get me on the show. So let's see here. There was a story, and we've talked a lot about, so there's an initiative right now that would restore parental rights in education. And a lot of that has to do with just making sure that parents are informed immediately about anything happening with their kids at school, anything that could put their kids in risk or danger at school. And there's so much of that being hidden from parents right now. But we've also done some stories on the problem of school districts hiding things from parents until they absolutely have to tell parents about it. I mean, gosh, we did a story, was that yesterday on the show, of the PE teacher in Shelton allegedly wearing a thong, walking around on multiple occasions wearing a thong.
Right.
And it's like...
And I've got a few stories that we're looking into, but because schools do this, it makes it very hard to research.
Well,
and
what
prove.
Was the story, before I get into this atrocious example, we did a story from Alicia Perkins at OSD Rescue
last week or something, Tumwater.
But what was the
wrestling coach that bit the girl?
Oh yeah, that like had a weird like bit the girl on the shoulder and like had a hard, you know, when he was like play wrestling with her or something, and the school went weeks without telling parents about this until Alicia reaches out. They know it's going to hit the news and they say something to parents about it. It's absolutely insane. So there's a story right now in Lake Stevens, Washington. Lake Stevens School District pays millions to settle sexual grooming lawsuit. So this has to do with a teacher accused of sexually grooming a then student who's now 19 years old. It says Lake Stevens School District has agreed to pay millions to former student Kaylin Tabor, now 19, to resolve a pending lawsuit. In addition, the district has agreed to increase its training of both school staff and district level administrators related to topics including sexual grooming and mandatory reporting. Keep that in mind. Plaintiff's lawsuit alleged that Mark Hine, a math teacher at Lake Stevens Senior High School, targeted students, including Kaylin, then a sophomore math student, and engaged in a pattern and practice of sexual grooming behavior. So after that, they ended up suing the school district. There were all these issues where they, you know, weren't taking it seriously. They weren't mandatory reporting as they are. They're mandatory reporters. The attorney for this student who sued put out this statement, forcing a 15-year-old to participate in years-long litigation to ensure that school professionals protect kids is a betrayal to every child in the Lake Stevens School District. Kaylin Tabor and her family have repeatedly proven themselves much braver than the adults charged with keeping her safe. The Tabor family is relieved to close this chapter in hopes that increased district-wide training results in protection of all students in the future. Now, look, I'm glad she got a settlement and that this is behind her, but get this. The teacher, Mark Hine,
resigned from his position after more than 2 years of paid leave to avoid participating in an internal investigation, and the district paid him a severance of $122,000. So he got to sit on paid leave, which I'm guessing that severance is a year pay, because that sounds about right for school teachers in the state of Washington. So he got to sit on his you-know-what after allegedly grooming this young girl, collect 2 full years of pay, courtesy the taxpayers, and then on top of all of that, even though he was an active subject of this grooming investigation that was probably going to cost the school district millions of dollars in a settlement, they gave him an extra $122 or $122,000 for his, what, pain and suffering? So you can be a teacher, have credible allegations of grooming. You can sit on your butt at home, collect a paycheck for 2 full years, and then get a nice fat severance, probably because the teachers union negotiated that way, of $122,000. And it's also as part of this, and this is key, the Lake Stevens School District didn't notify law enforcement at the beginning of all this. The accusations of grooming came out. Nor was Hine placed on administrative leave until August of 2022, when an outside counselor advised law enforcement of the teacher's conduct and a police investigation was finally launched. So, of course, until there is some sort of, like, their hand is forced, oh, I guess we got to let the police know about this. I guess we got to put him on leave, and then we'll pay him for 2 years while he's on leave, and then we'll give him a nice fat settlement check. And this reminded us of the Callie Keeler case, of course, the Puyallup wrestler. And she reports to her coach immediately, not even knowing that the wrestler was a boy, thinking it was a girl who she felt like intentionally sexually assaulted her on the mat. And what was it, 2 months before the school district reported it to police? And it was only after what? Only after we reached out about it. And they're mandatory reporters. So this stuff is not rare. This happens all the time. I mean, we've given multiple examples of this thing on this show in the past 3 months, 4 months. This is why we need the initiative to pass protecting parental rights. But that won't fix all of these problems. There have to be punishments. Why is no one from the school district going to jail? You're mandatory reporters, and you had credible allegations of an adult man grooming minor girls. And not only did you not put him on leave immediately, you didn't contact the police. It's against the law. You can have a fine. You can spend time in jail for being a mandatory reporter. If you're a cop, cops are mandatory reporters on, like, domestic violence. You know, if they've got, like, a friend or family member, or they know some instance of domestic violence is happening and they don't report it, they can lose their badge. So there's no consequence. They totally get away with it.
Taxpayers.
Same in Callie Keeler. In Callie Keeler's case. You think anybody in the Puyallup School District has been fired for the 2 months of not reporting Callie Keeler's allegations of sexual assault to the police? No, and then the schools write the big, the taxpayers are the only ones who pay. You pay because they write a big fat settlement. And I hope, you know, I don't even know if they're suing. I know maybe they were talking to a law firm about some of this. I hope Callie Keeler's family sues, and I hope they get a big fat settlement. It sucks that it's from taxpayers, but at some point, there has to be actual real punishments for people who are not doing what they're supposed to do and who are tasked with perhaps the most important job in the state, teaching kids, being good stewards of your children when you drop them off at the front door, making sure that they're protected. They're not doing any of it. It's disgusting.
I do think you should lose your job. If taxpayers have to pay millions of dollars because of your mistake, you should at least lose your job.
Right. Like, yeah, if you got us sued and we had to, as long as it's not something you did in good faith, right? Because there are other reasons that aren't sexually motivated or something. It's a crime to not report. Absolutely insane. These people are nuts. So anyway, that's what the teachers union gets its teachers, big fat settlements when they're accused of grooming kids, and they can just walk off into the sunset. And I know that their OSPI is trying to revoke his teaching certificate, which they should, but that's not even really a punishment, because at that point, I mean, you're in the news, so anybody Googles you, they're probably not going to hire you to work with kids. All right, we'll get to Trump's latest post about Iran coming up next. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes at sellwithwes.com. And I would recommend getting an early start. You know, the market is sort of constantly changing, but especially in this market, the way it is right now, you know, you can't just throw your house up for sale and get all this money for it like you used to be able to. A little more thought has to go into it these days. You might have to make some cosmetic upgrades. Wes and his team will tell you everything they'd recommend and help you execute it as well to take the stress off your plate. Jim H. gives Wes and his team 5 stars. We packed our bags and hit the road to a new state, but we'd jump at the chance to work with Wes again in a heartbeat. A giant shout out to Ebby on his team for her incredible support, unwavering dedication, and tireless effort. Together, they turned our long-distance deal into a breezy walk in the park from beginning to end. Have you ever heard anybody refer to their home selling process as a breezy walk in the park?
And that you'd like to do it again?
Come on, people, and that you'd like to do it again? Why would you sell your house with anybody else but Wes and his team? Go from Sell with Wes to Sold with Wes. On his website, you can peruse some of the recent listings that they've sold for clients, give you a good example of what they've been able to accomplish for their clients. But I would suggest, you know, start with their home value calculator. You type in your address, tells you what your home might be worth. And then Wes will give you a free market analysis just to sort of set your expectations. And most importantly, see what you need from him. What do you need from him to make the process a breezy walk in the park from beginning to end? That's a good review right there. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, President Trump doubling down on the threat. And I shouldn't laugh or smile, but wow, the reactions to this have been something else. And the Post is something else. So he said the deadline's 8 p.m. tonight. I think I thought it was 8 a.m. yesterday. I was wrong. It's 8 p.m., so 5 p.m. Pacific time. The President of the United States said this on Truth Social. A whole civilization will die tonight, never to be brought back again. I don't want that to happen, but it probably will. However, now that we have complete and total regime change, where different, smarter, and less radicalized minds prevail, maybe something revolutionarily wonderful will happen. Who knows? We will find out tonight, one of the most important moments in the long and complex history of the world. 47 years of extortion, corruption, and death will finally end. God bless the great people of Iran. Now, okay. I have learned not to panic about things Trump says. 5 years ago, if I saw that, I would have been like, he's mentally unfit for office, 25th Amendment, get him out of office. But Trump is a master negotiator, art of the deal. I tend to think there's actually something totally different than the two options people are looking at. I think they already have some sort of plan of attack in mind that they were already going to carry out. And no, you can't obviously take out a whole civilization, because you can't say God bless the great people of Iran in the same paragraph as saying a whole civilization will die tonight, because that would include the great people of Iran. But you know, Trump tries to, I think he's trying to come across as a madman because he wants them to think that he will do something like this. However, I think the leaders of Iran are madmen, and one of their greatest strengths is also their greatest weakness as human beings. And that is that they don't care if the people of Iran die. The leaders of Iran don't care if the people of Iran die. And that's hard, because that's a whole different ballgame to deal with leaders like that. So we'll see what happens. Congressman Adam Smith, a Democrat from our state, who is the ranking member of the Armed Services Committee, was on MS Now this morning.
Look, it is just completely disgusting and not something any president should ever say. You know, and if Republicans are concerned about that, they should be focused on stopping Donald Trump. I mean, look, whether he does it or not, the language he has used, the way he has approached this conflict, his complete lack of concern for all of the costs of the war, the people being killed, the wild and insulting rhetoric he is using, it has done such damage to the United States of America, to our place in the world. You know, there was the old saying about how America first should never mean America alone. I never believed that. But this is Trump with America alone, and America is just, you know, morally bankrupt at this point. Those words have done, I think, as much damage to the United States reputation in the world as anything that's happened, gosh, since the end of World War II. I can't even remember what. So regardless of what happens at this point, what Trump has done to date has done an enormous amount of damage. It would certainly make it vastly worse if he carries out any part of that threat. But it is time for Congress to figure out every day, how can we rein in Trump's power? He is clearly unfit to lead this country.
Yeah, and again, I mean, for the party that allowed Biden to be in office, I don't want to hear anything about unfit. That's just ridiculous. And I think in a lot of ways, Democrats have undermined their ability to talk about an issue like this seriously and to be believed, right? I mean, because he's saying every day Congress needs to be focused on how can remove Trump from office. Yeah, Democrats have been focused on that for 10 years already. Every single week, it's a new reason why you thought Trump was unfit for office and should be jailed or impeached or removed or 25th Amendment and all those things. So it just doesn't ring serious anymore when you say stuff like that. And I always thought that was unfortunate because in the event that he did something that really needed to be taken seriously and they needed to move on trying to get him out of office, you know, people would be like, look, you've been saying that for 10 years. We're just not doing it anymore. I tend to think I think Trump has earned on foreign policy the benefit of the doubt. And so I think I am unchanged by the post that he made about ending an entire civilization. I asked you guys in our subscriber poll on Patreon, Locals, and X. Now, if I'm wrong and he does something nuts, then, you know, I'll talk to you guys about it tomorrow, I guess. I asked you on Patreon, Locals, and X, does President Trump's latest post on Iran make you more confident or less confident in his strategy on Iran? More, less, or no change, Nicole?
I'm going to say no change because I think he's just sticking with his rhetoric, I guess. And I'm going to say no change. I still have some confidence, but it's going to be hard, I think, to get two parties in his art of the deal. It's you have to make somebody feel like they're getting something out of the deal. And yeah. I think it's going to be hard to do in this
case. Well, and that's what he says. And he's done this in so many Middle East countries that had been ostracized by, you know, the Western world and made them feel like, oh, let's make money together. Let's you know, do business together. And I think he's been successful in that regard. And that's why he says, oh, you know, these people are different, smarter, less radicalized, maybe something revolutionarily will happen. And so he wants to give them sort of like almost that same outreach of, you know, grow with us, don't mm-hmm. be destroyed. But I don't know if Iran, again, they're madmen. So what do you do? Most of you are saying no change, 60%. Robin says no change, but I wish he'd act more presidential. That's never going to happen, okay? This is, Trump is what you get. Shelley said, Trump is a great poker player, so you'd never know if he was pulling your leg or not. I'll trust what he's doing until I see something he does that tells me to do otherwise. Weisscastle, changing the language from back to the Stone Age to civilization will die is only an effort to make it 100% crystal clear what the consequences will be. Yeah, because he said he was going to bomb them back to the Stone Age. And I suppose if you were going to do that, then people would absolutely die. Amy said, I feel that he's planning something different than is what being said out loud. I agree with this. The more I thought about it overnight, I talked to Zach Abraham about this on Swamp Watch, and Zach's insight kind of made me change my mind about it. I agree. I think he's already got a plan and they're positioning themselves to execute on the plan regardless of what Iran says. She says, now with the images coming out of women and children making a human chain around a power plant. So apparently women and children are going out, and these are people like loyal to the regime or else who've been forced to go do it by the regime, I imagine, because look what they're wearing. Kids in a military costume forming a ring around... That's scary, and I don't think they'd bomb it with them there, so maybe that's actually good for Trump. He can say, oh, we wanted to bomb it, but there were women and children there. She said, now with these images coming out, I almost feel like the administration knew this evil regime would do this, and this is their way to either save these women and children or strike elsewhere where attention isn't focused, possibly. And clearly the regime believes that that's where they need to have these women and children around the power plant. Can you imagine, though, as a regime, I guarantee you don't do anything. You don't protest or do any sort of form of civil disobedience in Iran or whatever it is, even though this is in favor with the regime, without the regime knowing about it and approving it. So they're willing to send their women and children there to die. They're on a bridge right there. Yeah, absolutely crazy. I'll read one more of those. Cynthia, I often wish he would learn to speak softly and carry a big stick. One of my favorite phrases in dealing with difficult people in my life is, as you wish. Leaves them worried and guessing what will come next. FO also works. I mean, I think President Trump has shown that he's willing to do what he says he's going to do. And so, I don't know. I guess we're going to see. One more quick... What?
What time is it? One. We're on the countdown here. So it's four TikTok. There. So, whew.
Yeah. So, TikTok. We'll see. All right. New York City's mayor wants more... compassion for incarcerated people. And he doesn't want them to go to a hospital in the prison where they're at. He wants them to be treated out in the community. Great idea. So this is from CBS News. Mayor Mamdani announces some Rikers Island detainees will be housed in a therapeutic unit at a Manhattan hospital. Gee, what could go wrong with taking the criminals off Rikers Island and putting them in a therapeutic unit at a Manhattan hospital? It says, detainees at Rikers Island with complicated medical needs will be transferred to a Manhattan hospital to get access to specialty care, the mayor announced. A new therapeutic housing unit is opening to facilitate the mayor's plan of closing the troubled jail complex. And this is the real thing. He wants Rikers Island closed. This is kind of, compare it to our Predator Island here, where they're finding all these ways and reasons to take people off McNeil Island, where the sexually violent predators have been housed in Washington State. And they've been, more and more of them have been released into these less restrictive facilities in communities near you. And it's all because Democrats just want to close the pedophile island. They want to close it down. And so they're going to go into communities. And that's what he's doing. He's finding places to put inmates that aren't Rikers Island. It says the first one will be at Bellevue Hospital in Kips Bay. We don't even know where that is, so I won't even read it to you. Here's what Mamdani said on this health center that's opening up.
We stand here together at New York City Health and Hospitals Bellevue, opening an outposted therapeutic housing unit for incarcerated individuals, the first facility of its kind.
Why are you cheering? What?
The system
fails
incarcerated individuals in need of help in two distinct ways. First, they do not receive the care they need for acute conditions. Second, it deters patients from seeking critical and sometimes life-saving treatment in the first place. These conditions are deeply counterproductive, and time after time, they have turned preventable situations into full-scale crises.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that people who are incarcerated shouldn't get the medical care that they need while they're incarcerated. I'm not saying you just let them sit there and die, but isn't it kind of weird, like, to have that level of enthusiasm and cheering for a medical unit being opened for like murderers and rapists? It's like, no, that's just something you do and you get it done and like no fanfare, but they're there cheering that one guy puts his hand over his heart. Isn't that the weirdest thing? And it's just like the communist way, you know, they want the bad mixed with the good and they want everyone indistinguishable. Everyone indistinguishable. Your grandma who needs some cardiovascular care, she'll be right down the hall from the rapist who's in there because his heart felt weird one day while he was out on the prison yard. It's just strange. All right, we'll get to comments from the live stream coming up next. First, I always talk to you guys about, you know, family budgets and when they're stretched. So right now, I think it's fair to say with the gas prices that there's a lot of people feeling the pinch and there's nothing really that can be done about it for the time being. So can you save money in other places? And insurance is a really good place to look that a lot of people don't think about because they just think insurance is a fact of life. It is what it is. But do you have the best price? Are you paying more than you need to be paying? Do you have certain policies that include things you don't even need? And how would you know that unless you had an expert take a look at it for you? So First Mark Insurance, their First Mark Challenge does just that. They ask you to trust them, just to look over your insurance and give you some recommendations. And so many of our viewers and listeners are saving hundreds of dollars a month by using First Mark Insurance for their insurance needs. And that's thousands of dollars a year. We've even had examples of someone saving $12,000 a year. You're welcome. Robin says, I joined First Mark. I'm saving $100 a month. Yes, $100 a month. Debbie says, First Mark's the absolute best. So comforting having them in our corner. I highly recommend it. I love hearing that feedback. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they always have your best interest in mind. So call First Mark to take the First Mark Challenge today. Tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. Okay, some comments from all you yahoos watching the show live today. On the audit of DCYF, Mr. Millwright, having the state investigate fraud of state NGOs, do criminals get to investigate their own crimes? It is interesting how the state auditor looks at how a state agency is spending money. But, I mean, who else, I guess, would do it?
Right. It doesn't feel unbiased, but you have to assign it to someone.
Right. And it is an independent state elected. That's why it's an elected position, right? And it's, that's appropriate. Because if you had, like, the governor who's picking the head of DCYF and he's also picking the person who audits DCYF, that would be problematic. So the people get to decide who the auditor will be. And I think that's the idea of the independence of the office. JMPNW, COVID was just a way to spend a ton of money. Start all these new programs and then just keep them going, hoping the money rolls in. Now people are dependent on those programs.
It was definitely a way to get new programs started. Yes. And then they knew the funding would end, but they just figured we'd make up for it somehow.
Yeah, well, 100%, because all these budgets increased because of COVID. And then they're like, oh, well, we can't go back now. So we got to find a way to continue to keep the budget bloated. Just crazy. Country guy, I think Trump should do away with any remaining COVID, except maybe economic, like, rebuilding from places that,
done with that.
I guess. Country guy, why worry about the use of state funds when you can just raise taxes and call it an emergency? Exactly. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. On Bob Ferguson being the absolute worst. Old Sub Sailor, I've said it before, he is a student of Saul Alinsky and is following the socialist communist plan for a complete takeover. He sees himself as Premier Ferguson, dictator of the People's Republic of Washington State. Moon Goddess, you know it's bad when Brandy wants Inslee back. Correct. Inslee, Jay, buddy, please come back. Please
He's
come
been
back.
Tweeting lately.
I'll never say anything mean about you ever again. Tom, misfeasance is Ferguson... Okay, that's I thought he just good. Spelled it wrong. He said Miss, like M-I-S-S, mm-hmm. Feasance, space, Feasance, is Ferguson's drag name.
Miss That'd be a good one.
Feasance. That's funny. That's on my top list of best comments ever. MKW, Dory Monson said Bob Ferguson is the most dangerous politician in Washington state history. And as always, Dory was right.
Mm-hmm.
Most dangerous and most annoying. Mandatory reporting failures in Washington schools. I know Hines' wife. She's very kind. She runs a group for disabled adults. Are they still married? That would be my question. This teacher that was accused of grooming kids, is he still married to her? Because you say you know Hines' wife. Weisscastle, if no one in management was fired for this, then nothing will change. I agree. Steve, the groomers are bad, but the teachers' unions are complicit. 100%. They negotiate the contracts that deal with how allegations are going to be handled. That's why this guy gets this big payday.
Yeah, I also think that OSPI needs to actually start doing some crackdowns because that's part of the problem is that they haven't been getting involved until way later in the process. And so, I mean, they need to get involved quicker and these situations are, it's really out of control. Seriously, I've been hearing stories and it's crazy.
Yeah, and make an example out of them. Like, actually put out a press release. Like, we've stripped this teacher of his teaching license. Right. He was grooming girls.
And these poor kids that have to report are being ostracized at school. Yeah. And so they don't want to report it. And then even the parents don't want to report it because they don't want their kids to deal with the outcome of them reporting it or whatever it is. So, I mean, there's a specific situation right now. I've got multiple parents that really want to say something, but they're really hesitant.
You want to give some details to try to elicit some... So there is a situation also in Shelton, right?
Yeah.
Involving someone accused of doing something untoward. We haven't reported on it because we just can't pin it down and we don't want to be sued. So if you're someone in the Shelton School District who might know anything about this particular situation and have some evidence of it, we would love to hear about it.
Yes.
Is that good enough? Okay.
Because at this point, Shelton police do not know.
They don't know about it. I don't give a chuck. Says $5 daily unbelievable sponsorship. Boop. No King Fergie. Washington is not a monarchy. Fight back. I agree. All right. Nicole, thank you.
Yeah.
We'll get to our sanity check, which is a good one, coming up next. First, are you concerned about what's happening in Iran? Are you concerned about the impact that whatever the hell Trump does tonight at 5 p.m. Pacific time will have a major impact on the markets in the United States? Well, I think that would be a reasonable thing to be worried about. You can reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital to talk through kind of those concerns. And also he has been fielding a lot of calls from clients about AI, crypto, tech, all of those things, just a variety of market noise issues. So he can give you a free personalized know your risk portfolio review. It's basically a second opinion for your retirement portfolio. And I think that's a really good thing for anybody to do, no matter who you do it with. But Bulwark Capital is focused on risk management. This is what they do every day. They're looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, to give your retirement as much upside as possible. That's why the team at Undivided trusts our retirement to Zach Abraham. Even my sweet mother trusts her retirement to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com, KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. This is a doozy. So I love this. So Barry Weiss, who founded the Free Press, of course, was appointed as one of the heads of CBS News. And you have, it's obvious. It's obvious because CBS is pursuing stories that I think old CBS never would have pursued and getting back to some of the fundamentals of good journalism, including investigative reporting. And when Nick Shirley did the Quality Learing Center in Minneapolis and then went to investigate healthcare and childcare payments and entities in California, a lot of mainstream news turned away. And because it's like, oh, a conservative's doing that. Oh, we're not going to give it any credibility. We're not going to give it any credence. Except CBS News has been there doing some investigative work on the ground. Their latest investigative report on hospice care found a Los Angeles County hospice physician, one guy, has Medicare claims for nearly 2,800 patients across 126 different hospices. Here's part of the CBS report.
The state of California says that if a doctor is involved with any more than like even just a few hospices, it is a sign of potential fraud. At the heart of the industry are doctors who are trusted to sign off on care. But in records for the active physicians caring for terminal patients, one stands out. A man whose name appeared on claims from 126 hospices and had 60% more in Medicare reimbursements than the next closest doctor in 2024, the last full year of available data. Dr. Rajiv Buva.
My name is Adam Yamaguchi. I'm a correspondent with CBS News, and we're doing a story about hospice. And we're just trying to understand how often he's here.
It's not even seen him a long time.
In a long time.
Neither had many of the hospices we visited. We wanted to find Dr. Buva to ask how he managed to work for so many different providers. So we followed a trail of hospice offices linked to his name and Medicare claims totaling $71 million in 2024 across the LA basin.
We understand that Dr. Rajiv Buva is the medical director here. We're just trying to get some information about him.
He's not? No.
Was he at some point?
Yes, he was.
But you're telling me he no longer is associated with you guys?
No.
Was he at some point?
Thank you. Wow. Absolutely insane. So California said if the doctor's involved in a couple different hospices, that's a potential for fraud. This guy, 126. Rajiv, they're on to you, man. I would be fleeing by now if you haven't already because the feds are coming for you. That has been our closing sanity check. Also, just a good reminder of what a little independent journalist push can do to get the mainstream news doing what should be its job. It's pretty cool. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. We truly do. Tiny little bit more appreciation. However, for our paid subscribers, I know there's still freeloaders out there. I love you, just maybe not in the same way. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. We'd love to have you as a paid subscriber. You can watch episodes of Sundays with subscribers, do live Q&As with yours truly, also participate in our daily show polls, and join a growing community of people who want to give common sense a comeback. With that, we'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.